This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we're proud to welcome a special guest, James Seals, President and CEO of M&F Bank, based in Durham, North Carolina. M&F Bank, or Mechanics and Farmers Bank, is the second oldest black-owned bank in the nation, with a legacy dating all the way back to 1907 and holding over $520 million in assets today. We'll talk about the bank's rich history, its role in building black economic empowerment, and how it continues to thrive and serve communities more than a century later. Don't miss this important conversation, only on What's Going On with Earl Ingram. Don't miss it. Airing this week on all streaming platforms. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcast. Please like and subscribe as well. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. I am excited and really happy to have my next guest, none other than Mr. James H. Seals. He is the president and CEO of M&F Bank in Durham, North Carolina. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Let's talk a little bit quickly about your background, who you are.
Sure. So I'm the president and CEO of M&F Bank. I've been in this role for 11 years. I have 35, almost 40 years of banking experience. And I love what I do. I'm a community banker by heart. I've worked for large-scale banks, government organizations, but also community banks. Our bank is located in North Carolina. We're about $522 million in total assets. And we have eight locations, and we're located in the five largest markets of North Carolina. So we're in Charlotte, Raleigh, Durham, Winston-Salem, and Greensboro.
You know, you're the second oldest black bank in the nation, founded in 1907. It's been, 118 years. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's an amazing statistic.
Yeah, so the bank was founded in 1907 by nine founders, and they were all business owners. And they pulled their money together to start the bank with $10,000 back in 1907.
A lot of money.
And this was prior to the FDIC and any kind of state bank regulatory agencies. And so they had to go to the North Carolina legislature to petition the legislature that was all white to open up a minority bank or African-American owned bank in Durham, North Carolina, back in 1907.
Well, you can't look through a crystal ball and explain why in 1907, you know, things weren't exactly fair and equal and balanced in this nation as it relates to race. What would you think the rationale was that the legislature that was all white would think that this was a good idea?
Yeah, so the rationale was that Durham had a very healthy African-American population, but they could not put their funds in a bank, and they were not able to obtain any kind of financing for any kind of for a home, car, or even a business. And so the founders of the bank were actually business owners, and they said, we need a bank to strengthen our community, to provide access to capital to mechanics and farmers. And so that's the name of the official name of the bank is Mechanics and Farmers Bank.
So this
we just shorten it up for marketing purposes, but the official name is Mechanics and Farmers Bank.
So it wasn't just in North Carolina where blacks couldn't put their money in banks and other places. The fact that they were able to do that, and this is the second oldest black bank that's still around. What is the oldest, and what's is it? Why? Where is it located? In the South as well?
Yeah. So most black banks started in the South, And most black banks started as benevolent associations, where communities, the black community would pool their resources in the event one of their family, friends, or relatives had some kind of traumatic event. They had that pool of money to actually help that individual or that family. So most of them started in the South. And at one point, we had about 150 different black-owned banks all across the country, but they were all in the South. The majority of them were in the South. And then as African-Americans migrated up north, they started opening up more black banks in the North and then the Midwest.
Well, so how many black banks do you think there are now, clearly predicated on what happened in the city where I live, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where there were four black banks 40 years ago or so? There aren't any left in this city. What do you attribute that to?
It's a combination of factors. You have to have community support. And so when we had a lot of urban renewal and black communities were kind of divided up, so now black people are living all across different communities.
True.
And then they started, they had the opportunity to bank with majority banks. So that is one of the factors. The second factor is they just didn't have the business models to change with the times, so to speak. And they also lack capital to grow. And so those three kind of issues really prevented black banks from really prospering further. So yeah, it's easy to get it open, but maintaining it for, you know, many, many years is very, very difficult. And today we only have 20 black-owned banks in the whole United States.
Really?
And they have total combined assets of about a little less than $6 billion.
You know, Mr. Sills, it's almost unimaginable that there's only 20 remaining, especially since, and majority of them are in the South, because I have to even say myself, when I bought my first home, I didn't think of going to the black bank because at the time, the black banks didn't have the capital. And is it because we weren't banking with the banks, those of us who were in a position to do so, that they didn't have the capital, or our ignorance of not knowing?
I would say it's both. They didn't have the capital to support the market. And then I think most black banks do not do a very good job of marketing and making the communities aware of their products and services. And then sometimes people just feel comfortable with majority banks.
Well,
they don't understand that it's an ecosystem that banks create in terms of if you have your deposits there, they're lending your deposits out to communities that look like you. And so we're recycling that dollar more frequently in the community when you have a black-owned financial institution. A lot of times, majority institutions, not all of them, they will take those deposits that are in a black majority branch and move those deposits to fund other majority projects. So they're taking minority deposits out of one neighborhood and moving or funding potential loan opportunities in a majority neighborhood.
Well, that certainly appears to not be something that should be, you know, a kosher thing to do, but we're talking business, right?
Yeah, it's permitted to do. It's done every day. But that's why it's so important that we have our own financial institutions, our own credit unions, our own savings and loans. It's important that we have those types of financial institutions, because you know, we would hope that those institutions are going to be trying to help our community.
Well, again, you're in the South and you're in an area, we were talking about this earlier, Carolinas, especially Charlotte and Durham and other places. When we talk about only 20 black banks, probably the majority of them are in North Carolina.
Correct. So the founders of our institution were pretty strategic. We have 10 HBCUs, historically black colleges, in North Carolina. And they opened up in markets where there was a high concentration of HBCU students, but also alumni. And that's probably what has kept the bank going for such a long period of time, because we have a captive market where we are physically located. And we're located very in close proximity to those HBCU schools. And if I was to take you back 40, 50 years ago, just remember that those HBCUs were like little economic centers.
Right.
And so your pastor, your teachers, your lawyers, your doctors, they all lived and worked in and around those HBCU campuses. So there was a lot of economic opportunity and activity in and around those specific areas. But that's one of the reasons why our bank has been successful, is because we're located near those HBCUs.
Well, you know, I can tell you about the city of Milwaukee. We were the industrial metropolis. We were the machine shop of the world. And so we produced everything. And so many blacks worked in industry and lived middle-class lifestyles. Actually, Milwaukee had one of the highest standards of living for black people in those 60s and 70s than even Charlotte and probably Durham and other places during that period of time. And so it could sustain those four black banks. But once industry left, there was nothing else that you know, banks or people were making enough money to keep banks open. And so I wanted to ask you the question of whether or not, because of your vast history in banking and those kinds of things, if once that industry left and Milwaukee had the second highest standard of living for blacks in the entire nation at that point in time, we are now one of the worst. Is there a correlation between the banks leaving and us being in the condition we're in now, in your opinion?
There is a correlation, but I got to caution you a little bit from the standpoint that it does take, you got to have a mixture of a customer base. You can have some that work for a school district, some that work for nonprofits, some customers work for, you know, some of those industries that have left Milwaukee.
Right.
But you also have to have entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs create jobs and they're creating economic activity. And so when you have all of those economic kind of engines in your community, it makes it easier for a black bank to sustain itself. Because you need every kind of consumer, but also business person and professional person like a doctor and lawyer, CPA, for your bank to be helpful, healthy, and sustain itself.
So I can tell you that one of the arguments that entrepreneurs had back in those days when we had those four banks was they couldn't get capital. They couldn't get capital for their businesses from the main banks, and it was difficult for them to get financing from the black banks. So it was we didn't have and don't have that educational bastion that they have in the South where the black universities are. And so it's going to be probably a difficult lift for those blacks who live in the North who really came here for industry. And now industry has left and it's barren.
I don't think it's a difficult lift. I think there is opportunity to get the right people involved in your community up there to start a bank. It may be small, but I do think there are prosperous, committed individuals.
No question.
Want to have a financial institution in Milwaukee. They've had them in the past. It does take quite a bit amount of capital to start a bank right now. Talk for Milwaukee, it's probably $25 million to $50 million to start a bank. But I do think, based on the population and what I know about Milwaukee, it definitely has the critical mass to support a financial, a minority bank, a commercial minority bank. You do have a savings and loan up there. I think it's Columbia.
Right. That's it. That's the that's it.
Pretty small. You also have a former Seaway branch there that was taken over by Self-Help Credit Union. So you do have some financial relate black financial related institutions up there. But the difference with our bank, and I just want to just share this with you, we primarily focus on small and medium-sized businesses. And so we're a commercial bank. We don't do mortgages here. We don't do car loans.
Oh, okay.
We don't do personal loans. We're focused on helping entrepreneurs and business owners and nonprofits and professionals grow.
So you're a niche.
That's our niche.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've been in business 118 years. And we've been profitable 116 out of 118 years.
So you've always been a niche-oriented bank.
Yeah, so the business model here has always focused on business owners and entrepreneurs.
Well, that's right.
And churches. And churches.
Mechanics and farmers.
We have quite a few church loans.
Mechanics and farmers originally, right? I mean, that's that was business.
Exactly.
Well, you know, to hear this conversation, which I have from the first time you and I had a conversation, all I could think about was, again, from spending 70 years in the North and in Milwaukee and watching what transpired during my lifetime, and then knowing the things that I've read about, you know, Charlotte and Durham and many of the southern states where the universities are, there almost appears to be more opportunity because there are more educated people, black people in the South than there are in the North, and that's mainly because of those different universities, and that transfers into opportunity and finances and all those things. Is it safe to say that?
You know, that's a great observation, and that's true, but I got to share this with you. We've had multiple generations of customers bank with us, and it was instilled in various families. You had to bank with Mechanics and Farmers Bank, and so that was pushed down generations.
Right.
And I think that is... You don't see that everywhere, but you see it in the South more. It's that loyalty that says they tell their sons, their grandchildren, their other relatives, my father banked there. I want you to bank there. And then that father tells his son. So you'd be amazed how many generations of families that we have here that have banked with us for 50 years and 60 years and 80 years and 100 years. And we've had other organizations, including some businesses, that have banked with us for over 100 years. And so that is kind of instilled in the communities that where we're located to bank with us.
So that represents stability because...
That helps with stability if you have people were saying, I'm going to bank with you.
Well, and at the root of it is the farmer who owned the land, who farmed and, you know, was able to have his own business. And when we left the South, many of us and our parents and who didn't want to continue with that way of living and came up north, we lost that. Is it safe to say that we lost that connectivity that has been able to stabilize and continue to prosper in the South?
Yes, I agree with that, but it has to be a part of our overall culture to support Black businesses and Black organizations and Black doctors. It's so critical, and Black professionals. So it's not just the banking industry or banking field. I think we have to have that mindset that we're going to buy Black and we're going to try to support, Black-owned businesses and entrepreneurs. And so I don't think it matters if it's, I think it's stronger in the South than the North, but it needs to be stronger everywhere.
I can only have a conversation like this with you, a Black man in the South, and me, a Black man in the North, and I would not have this conversation with anyone else. But there is this belief from some of us that if you do business with the Black person, you're not going to get the best quality of business. There's a misconception, and I'm sure you've heard this.
Yeah.
And it, over the generations that have passed, it's gotten stronger in the North. And so people are further away from understanding the importance of that dollar circulating in your neighborhood and in your community. The dollar in Black Milwaukee doesn't circulate one time. And so because it doesn't circulate at all, there's so many people who struggle and who financially, especially younger generations of young people, whose futures are bleak because they don't understand the circulation of the dollar in your community.
And you know, I used to live in the North, lived in Wilmington, Delaware. I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. And my father used to tell me something all the time. If we don't support these little small businesses in our neighborhood, they're not going to survive. And we're going to have to drive all the way across town to get a quart of milk and a package of butter and bread and all that. And so it's been instilled in me over generations and over time that you have to support local businesses, especially local businesses in your neighborhood. Because if not, they're going to go out of business because they're not making sales. And then you're going to have to drive all the way across town to get that same basic product and service. Now, yes, is the price going to be a little higher? Yes, it probably is. Is the service sometimes not as great? Sometimes, but sometimes when we go all the way across town and we receive poor service, we come back home and then we drive all the way across town and patronize the people again.
Yes.
But for us, when you patronize sometimes a minority business, you only give them one time, one shot. And so we kind of need to get out of that and understand the bigger picture, that it's an ecosystem that we want to create. And I'll give you a statistic. Do you know that the average dollar only leaves the Black community, I think, within 2 hours
yes.
getting it?
Yes.
And some of the other, you know.
But that's not where you live. That's that way where I live.
A day, 2 days, and some of them are up to 7 days.
That's correct.
So we're at 2 hours.
But where you live, that's not the case. It can't be because the banks are still.
It's better. I want to be honest with you, but we still should have more than what we have, given the high percentage of African Americans in North Carolina, and the education level of African Americans here. And the number of HBCUs here.
Right, educated
There's
people.
There's no reason why we shouldn't be a billion-dollar bank.
You know, Mr. Seals, I, it's just so to me, I'm 71 years old. Mm-hmm. And as I look and survey the landscape for the future after my generation is gone, and you just don't see those, that message or that understanding of what it is you're talking about being disseminated to the younger generations. And I have to say that the future looks bleak if they can't understand that. How do we get that message to them?
Well, I'm a, Mr. Earl Ingram, I'm an optimist, and I'm always going to be positive. I think that's why I'm on your show. That's why I do a lot of interviews with, you know, different media outlets, because I want to tell the story. I want people to know that, you know, what we do and how we impact communities, and that it's important to support minority businesses, especially ones that are in your respective neighborhoods. It's just critical. And so, I'm going to keep preaching that until whenever I leave this earth.
Right.
I'm going to keep preaching, and I'm not going to give up on it, because I know we can do more. You know, we generate we spend about $1.8 trillion a year.
More than probably 20 of the top nations.
Spend as a community $1.8 trillion, but there's only $5 billion in minority owned banks.
Well, yeah, but that's been an ongoing problem. This is what I mean, Mr. Seals.
But I'm not giving up on that, to try to get more of that $1.8 trillion.
Well, but we've got to educate people to understand what it is you just said. You're a banker, you're engaged and involved, and but the masses of us, we've got to get that message to them in order for them, especially today in a technological global reality that makes it even more difficult. The competition is even more fierce.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I need you to keep doing what you're doing. You need to have interview the president of the savings and loan there, the president of the bank that's owned by Self-Help Credit Union.
All right.
That's the former Seaway. You need to get them on your show.
Okay.
They need to tell your audience and the greater community what they do and how they do it and how they serve.
There's no magic pill
In and around their branch locations.
Yeah. So what you're saying is there is no magic pill. It's step by step. Mm-hmm. And that's the hope. You know, I will say to you, and I know you're a busy man. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. But you know, it just has been devastating as I've watched those banks close. And I remember the time when they were open and business was, you know, robust, for more or less. And I've seen the neighborhoods and the communities die after that happened. So, you know, we've got to resurrect ourselves. And even the churches, that as you stated, the churches are one of your biggest, businesses. Our churches have kind of diminished. So, you know, it's a lot different in the North than it is in the South, but
I hear you saying that, but it really isn't. I just think we got to get more awareness.
Okay.
To support those local institutions, and they need to do more marketing and outreach to let people know that they're there.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy, busy schedule. I think that, you know, we're going to make sure that this gets all around the nation, this conversation, because I think it's not just in the city of Milwaukee that's experiencing what we're experiencing. It's all over this nation. And there needs to be more you know, Jim Seals, and your message needs to reach as many corners of this nation and our communities as possible. So to continue to send messages of hope in in many hallowed areas of despair.
All right. Well, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be a guest on your show. And I'm happy to chat with you in the future. But we can't give up, and we got to stay positive, and we got to encourage more of our community to become business owners and entrepreneurs. I actually think that's the key.
So last thing, that risk to become a business owner and entrepreneur, the failure rate in that, in the Black businesses and that, and the entrepreneurial spirit, you can't give up the first time you try, right? I mean, the success rate in that is the stick-to-itiveness. Is that is that true?
That's my message. Most entrepreneurs are serial entrepreneurs. They may have one business, it failed, they started another one, they sold that one, they started another one. But those are the ones that drive wealth. And also they hire people and they spend money by buying products and services in and around their local communities. And they typically hire people that look like them. And so that's that ecosystem I'm talking about that we need in communities all across the United States, not just North and South, everywhere.
Mr. Seals, thank you very much for the time, and we'll certainly do this again.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.